Testing. September 20th, 1979, talking to Edgar Cowens and Cal Tagg for the biography series.
Okay, well, maybe we could start with when you were born and where.
No, I was born in Callens, Alaska, about 35 miles below Tanana on the Yukon River, on October 18th, 1904. My father's name was Harry, rather his name was Alexander Calland, but was better known as Harry Calland. My mother's name was Angeline Titty. My father was born and raised in Newfoundland, St. John's, Trinity Bay, St. John's, Newfoundland. And my mother was born around, I'm not sure, nobody seems to know, either here at Caltag or Nulato or somewhere around in this vicinity, as far as I can find out.
Who raised her?
I do not know. I have no idea. I never see. She died before I even had a chance to find out. And I never even thought about asking my uncle, Alex.
Can you change this?
Whoops.
Well, I can't wait for that to be on. That'll be in October, huh?
I don't know exactly when. I know I won't get it because we won't have TV.
Well, you get them to make a copy of the tape, you know, and then you'll see it sometime.
All over.
But then when you run dogs too, you know, in the springtime, stuff like that.
Wintertime, nighttime, all the time. But the dogs are your CNI anyhow. Nighttime. They can see more than you can. Not only see, but they hear and they smell food too. You don't know exactly half of what a dog knows. We don't. Because his nose tells him a lot of things. And his ears are so much keener than ours. Another thing, his eyesight is real good too.
You ever strain your eyes when you're driving dogs?
No. Not that I know of. Maybe, I don't know. I've driven all times of the night. Daytime too.
Springtime, March.
Yes.
Yeah.
I've been all over the spectrum. Yeah, I've been all over the spectrum. I've carried mail. I worked for the NC company carrying mail between Tanana and Ruby.
What was that like?
Oh, it was fun. It was all right. It was work all right. At that time, we got $5 a day in board, which was, you know, good money. Didn't cost us anything to live, or all we had to do was just buy some of our clothes. That's all. Dogs was furnished. Everything else was furnished. The NC. We had 800-pound load of mail out of Tanana for Ruby and beyond. And we had 2 sleds, 17 dogs. A lot of people think, well, them dogs, you know, reading books on dogs, or maybe don't listen, but the Tan team, they know where they're going. I know what they're going to do. That's all. No trouble.
Well, were you running dogs there before or after you were running to Hot Springs?
During 37, 35, rather, 34, 35. Well, I just working for the NC company. I had no dog team. Well, I had part of a dog team 1 year. It wasn't mine either. We borrowed the dogs. A fellow named Charlie Harper borrowed them from Teresa Butler, Yeah, Tanana, and we were trapping out on Tozi, headwaters of Tozi River, and went over into the Oman River. But that's the only team that I drove the longest before I had my own dogs. They're a nice team. They were a nice team. Very good. Very obedient. Listen to you every word. Period. All I had to do if I wanted to not make any noise, just step off the sled and just whistle them dogs. It stopped just like that.
Well, what did you do to train them like that? It's not everybody's
it, it's them. It was just natural the way I worked on them. Just natural. Because it's every time I seen something I wanted to shoot at something or seen something to shoot at, you know, I'd step on the brake and whistle. Just a little. And it didn't take long for him to. I didn't have to touch the brake. So, and they just stopped. And I had my own team afterwards trained that way. I put in a, in fact, going down Hot Springs Hill one time, I put in a run over my dogs. I put in a fell in the sled. Yeah, I seen a wolf come on the trail and I whistled at the dogs. And I stepped on the brake and they stopped just that quick and I almost fell in the sled. Yeah, and dogs. They're all right. I like dogs.
What did you have much to do with dogs when you were growing up?
I only had one pet dog, and he was my dog, or I was his dog, one or the other. I couldn't get away from him, no matter what I tried. I couldn't run away from him. And he was raised, the family, he was raised with him, up with me.
Did your father have dogs?
Yes, he had a team of dogs, and he sold them after him. They were crazy dogs. But they obeyed him real well.
Why were they crazy?
Boy, they didn't know nothing but go. That's right. 3.5 hours from Callens to Tanana.
How many miles is that?
Around 36, 35, 36. Mother and I on a sled. Of course, the trail, those days, the trail was just like a floor. See, there's a mail team on the trail all the time. Couldn't help it. There was three mail teams on the route between Tanana and Ruby, and there was always two teams on the trail. Plus your team and his team and somebody else's dog teams, you know. It was on the trail. It was just as hard as this. You could start out and walk right from Tanana to Ruby. You'd have beautiful walking. You didn't have to worry about breaking through the trail or anything. It was that hard. So much travel on it all the time. You could walk all along, even clean all the way down. You could start in at Fairbanks and walk all the way to Unalakleet. You had a place to stop every night, especially all the way down to well, here, then across the Unalakleet, and then it's all hard going from there all the way on over around towards Nome.
Well, what would you and your mom and dad be out on the trail for? Why would you be traveling?
Just going to Tanana for a trip. Mm-hmm. That's all. Dad was. Well, I can remember a time we started out from Callens and had a brand new sled. Brand new sled, and I was saying those were crazy dogs. We didn't even get 4 miles out of Callens before the dog seen a squirrel or something, and away they went, and he couldn't stop them in time. And when we did stop, the sled was broke back to the second stanchion. So then he turned the dogs around and went back home and got another sled from a father named Little Henry. Come back over and Well, why don't you cut lines anyhow?
Well, I'm wondering a little bit more about your dad. You said he came from Newfoundland.
Mm-hmm.
How did he end up in Alaska? What was he doing?
Well, he ran away from home when he was age 15. It's a big family. And his mother had died, and his father had remarried. And I guess he didn't get along with his stepmother or something. I don't know. Just wanted to get away, I guess. And he went out, Grand Banked. You know what Grand Banking is? He went out fishing for tomcod in the open rowboats there around off the banks of Newfoundland. Fished there for 3 years. Then he ended up down along the east coast there and joined the Navy. He was in that for about 3 years. And then he got typhoid fever and got cured. Then about that time, the strike was on, the gold strike in Alaska. So he sailed around. On three-masted schooner.
Where did he sail from?
New York, or over in that way somewhere in Boston. Boston, I guess. Coming around. Ship that was coming around. He hopped on board. He sailed all the way around, come into Nome. When he got off the ship in Nome, he had $1. That's a lot of money. So he ended up coming up into Yukon River here. Mm-hmm. He was down here up along the river and down here at Prepared Nulato. That's where he met my mother. They got married in 1903. And I was born in 1904. I think it was a little over a year afterwards, after they were married. And then he settled at Callan's then. And we stayed there till, I guess I was about 7 years old before he moved to Tamna. That's where I went to school in Tamna.
What was he doing in
Nulato
and Callan's?
Well, Nulato, he was at the time, I guess, when he met my mother and when they got married, or then before they got married, he's carrying mail for Corbyshire between Tamna and Nulato once a month. And then he moved to Callan's, and after he married, he had a roadhouse there. It's an overnight stop from Tanana. And there's a portage trail. That's where the portage goes across through and comes out the mouth of Mission Creek. So makes a big shortcut. And rather than following the river.
What was Callan's like in these days?
There was about five houses there. No, four houses, I guess. Four families. There was John Minook and the family. And little Paul and his family, then Mr. and Mrs. Langford and their daughter, and then there was little Henry and his family, plus my dad, our dad's family, or us.
Were those other people there before your dad went there?
Well, I'm not sure. I don't know. I didn't question, but it's been there for a long while, I presume.
Well, they started calling
Callan's
after he got there?
He had a roadhouse there, that's why. And the reason why, I guess, there was a survey team. What our dad said, there was a survey there. Mr. Murty was there in the camp there, and they done all their surveying there one summer from there. That was their base camp. That's how the place, I guess, was named after my dad. Because Grant Creek is just above there, about 3 miles. That was named after old man Grant also, woodcutter.
Was he Do you know of any native names for those places?
No. Old Station is the only native name, I guess you'd call it, and Tozi, Tozita, Tozikaret, Mouth Tozi River.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember anything of the roadhouse or stories your father told you about?
Oh, I remember the roadhouse. I remember seeing...
What was that like?
Oh, it was just people coming through, so...
What did the roadhouse look like?
It was just a... He had a... One building, I guess, the building that he had for the roadhouse must have been about 26 or 28 feet long by about 18 feet wide. And he had about, well, I guess, six or eight bunks in there. And then our house was built onto it, and they eat in the kitchen there on, off to one side on it. That's all I can remember. He had his own garden, I know that. And he cut wood for steamboats. He didn't have to have a contract, you know. As long as you had a wood pile out on the back, steamboats would buy wood. That time there was about 25 steamboats up and down the river. Not just one, but 25 different ones. Well, you see all the freight come in from St. Michael's up the river.
Do you remember any of those steamboats? I mean, you must know the names of them, but the different people that were running them, different kinds of
companies? No, I don't know the different people that was running the older boats. The only ones I know is the later boats. Because the steamers Sarah, Susie, Louise, and William Isom, and the St. Michael, and Minneapolis, and Julia B., and the Delta, the Reliance. Well, Captain Green, I know him because he was on the Reliance, Captain George Green. And Jack Green was on the steamer Alaska later on. And then there was the steamers, the Alice, and the steamer Tanana. Then there was the two Army transports, the steamer Jacobs and steamer General J.W. Jacobs and Jeff Davis. And then there was also later on, and there was the steamer Alaska and steamer Yukon, which was both sister ships. And then there was from Dawson, there was the White Horse and the Casca come down, but they run from White Horse down to Dawson, although I did see them in Dawson.
Teddy H was a gas boat.
No, Teddy H was a small steamboat.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
It was a small steamboat. Sam Dubin bought it last. He was the last owner of it.
Did you ever meet that guy, Sam Dubin?
Yeah. Well, he was a trader up the Keokuk River, all the way up to Hughes, Bettles, Wiseman. He had stores in Wiseman, Allicacket, and Cutoff. He had it. Well, no, I won't say Cutoff either. He had stores in Allicacket and Wiseman, Bettles.
What kind of guy
is he? Can't say. I only met him a couple of times, you know, but he was an ordinary trader, Jewish. He was Jew. Same as you've heard an awful lot about Dominic Vernetti. He was all the same Jews. I don't know how good Sam was, but I presume if he was like Dominic would give you the shirt off his back if he knew he could help you. A lot of people hated him and all this and that there, but he was that good to everybody. He was just, you know, he's just too good a hearted. Yeah.
Well, how about down right here? Caves and we hear different stories from people tell us about him. And it seems like he's a sort of a guy that people always had a story to tell about Dominic. Some experience.
Well, I don't know. I like Dominic. I've been with him and I've traded with him and I've I have no qualms with him, never had no qualms with him. He was real nice. And like I said, he'd give you the shirt off his back if you needed it. And those old people there, all those old people, in fact, I guess he fed all those old people at Keokuk more or less, you know. And the only reason why he got away from out of it was through handling a different line of goods, and that was no credit on that kind of goods. So he had a liquor store, and the liquor, it was all cash, and there was no credit. But he would outfit you for a go out to trap, and he was good. I have no qualms against him. He was real good. I liked him. I liked both him and Ella. Yeah.
Well, I'm wondering more about all the time you were living in Callens and what it was like for you as a young boy. How do
I know? Because I was only between about 6 years old, 7 years old. And all I know is eat in the morning, get up in the morning, and I don't know what time I had to go. Hate to go to bed, but I had to go to bed. And when I got up in the morning, Mother says, you got to write your ABCs, and that was it. And write down 100 up to a 100. So before I ever got moved away from Callens and went to Tannenau, I knew all my ABCs. I knew how to write my figures up to 100. So... But I know we used to have a great time there as kids. That family, little Henry's family, there's four or five boys and three or four girls. And we were right, just hop, skip, and a jump from house to house. They were just right next door to us. Little Paul or Langford was up a little ways, quite a little ways. Him and his wife. Well, we didn't see Gladys too much. Once in a while, but and Mrs. Langford, I don't know too much about them. And old man Paul, and little Paul and his wife and daughter Catherine, I knew them more. Of course, they were there anyhow afterwards too, you know. After Langford's moved up to Tannenau, then I lost track of Langford and them. Old man Langford dropped dead, I remember that in town when he had heart trouble. And he was taking strychnine every 2 to slow his heart down, you know, at that time. And he had an exceptional hard day. Going up, he just got to Tannenau, just got to the army post there. And he said, boys, I'm all in, and that was it. He didn't even get up to get the quinine, or the strychnine, you know. That's what he's after. Just dropped right there. I guess his wife moved away from there after that. I don't know exactly. I was a little too young then. To know.
So,
but the rest of the family, the rest of the people, the native people that was there, I knew them right up until now. I guess the last one now is in Tannenau, one of the boys, one of the Minook boys there. I guess he's retiring from the hospital service there. I don't know how long he's been working for the hospital. And Catherine Paul, she's in Fairbanks now. She's married up in Fairbanks.
Well, so from Callens, you moved to Tannenau. Mm-hmm. What was your dad doing after the roadhouse?
Well, he moved into Tannenau and moved up there. And he got a horse. For the winter, an old horse there, used the horse. He began I don't know whether he rented the horse or how he got a hold of the horse or what, but it was the horse. He finally ended up by buying the horse, and it was ours. He was an old horse then, poor fella. He hauled in the drayage business. He was hauling stuff from the steamboat landing to the different places in town. And hauling water. He was delivering water around town. He delivered water around town up to 22. And he bought another horse. He bought a horse that time, but a horse by the name of Pepper. A rightful name for the boy. He was just full of pepper, but he was a heck of a nice horse. He was just full of life, that's all. He was my pet, period. Yeah.
Oh, were there many people with horses in town?
Well, Arthur Campbell had 4 teams. Horses. Sable had one team. Joanna Sitch had one horse. Gus Thornblade had one horse. The NC Company had a little horse to deliver what they used for delivery, you know, from the store. And that was it. That was horse. Outside of the army, they had both horses and mules. I don't know how many teams.
Wasn't that a lot of work keeping a horse
in the winter? Yes and no. It's all according to how you took it in a stride, I guess, because you had to have wood, and the horse was your locomotion. So you have a barn for him, you know, a nice warm barn. You have a stove for him there too. So the only time he was cold was when he was out standing still, but otherwise, when he got in the barn, he was nice and warm all the time. At least that's the way I've seen him at Tannenau. Nice and warm. All the people that had horses had a barn for him, and plenty of oat hay and hay and oats. The NC Company had lots of oats, and Pashon didn't have any, but NC Company used to have it.
Do you know why your parents decided to leave Counts?
Yes, because I had to learn my ABCs a little better than what I knew.
Oh, so you could go to school.
Yes.
What was that school like in Counts?
It was a public school, and to my looking back on it now, we learned more when we were in the fourth grade than these children here now, pupils now in high school.
What kinds of things did you learn?
Well, we knew all our times tables, backwards and forwards, and it didn't make any difference which timetable the teacher pulled on you. It's just automatic, just like that for us. And then we knew our geography. From A to Z, as the saying goes, and history. We knew all our states, all the capitals, all the principal cities, and all the principal manufacturing items that they were making, you know. Now you ask these boys, even in high school, they don't know these here. I was surprised. It's like I asked my grandchildren here, I said, how are you making out any timetables? They didn't know the timetables. I went right after them right away. I said, you got to learn that. You got to learn that. I said, now, one of my granddaughters working in there, I got to use the adding machine all the time. I can't figure out. Figured out I gotta use an adding machine. The more you use an adding machine, the less you know. I know that. I found that out. That's true. You got you because you're depending on that machine. You notice that? Everyone notice it? The more you use an adding machine, the less you remember of your multiplication tables and your addition. I found that out.
I guess you wouldn't get as much practice.
No. I noticed that when I was working for on the steamboat, or working down here for the NC company, in my later years. See, I worked down there as a timekeeper, and I helped the bookkeeper there. And depending, all everything was depending on that adding machine. Yeah. Before that, you know, see, I could work things out in my head just quick. Now, of course, since I had the stroke, little stroke too, I lost a lot of that too. I have to go to the paper now. But I try to get my grandchildren there just in the, working out there with us. You know, use that pencil paper, never mind that adding machine. Get so you can work it up here. That's what I try to tell them. You'll be better off. Yeah, that's. Now I'm looking here at all the high school kids going to school now. What are they doing? They're using calculators. Well, there's not. After you get used to that machine, you can't figure in your own head. I don't know. That's the way I feel about it. How do you feel about it?
Well, I think that there's a lot of things that it's really handy to be able to do in your head.
Yeah, I think so too.
If you can, if you have to have that calculator, then a lot of, you know, pretty simple problems, you're just going to be stuck with it.
Sure.
But then there's complicated problems if the calculator really is good.
Oh, yeah. Gee whiz, yes, that's
might
true.
Take you a week to figure it out.
Yeah, that's right. I know. It helps you an awful lot in some respect aspects. But if you're going to depend on it, why, you know, what's the use of going to school?
Right, you've got to figure
things in your head. Yeah, I was asking a question down there one time. I think, who was it? George Walters and somebody else. They're asking a question down there about a percentage point. And while they're writing it down, figuring it out on the calculator, I told them what it was, and I missed it by, I think, half a point. Just that way. And I said, what do we need a calculator for? Of course, that's before I began using the adding machine myself. I'm working on that. I used it an awful lot. Sure, I used it an awful lot on when I was carrying handle working for the NC company there on the boats. But I wasn't using it in dividing or anything like that. I was using it just for adding up my totals. And so now I do all that anyhow. I go to the pencil and paper.
Well, did you like school?
Well, yes and no in different ways. But I never missed any days. I may have been late a few times, but I was in school all the time.
Mm-hmm. Weren't there a lot of other students at that time coming and going because they'd be out on the trap line with their family?
No, not at that time, no, because this when I went to school in Tannoy, it was practically all white children. All white children in school. There was only, let's see, Marie Ann Sitch, Margaret Peterson, and the Gee girls, which was three, I think. There was only about six of us, is all, that were Native or part Native. The rest of us were, the rest were all white children. Steady. So we knew one another from year to year. There was no, we We were there all summer and all winter. There was no transients.
So were people in town and all there for mining?
No, it was mostly for the army being there. There was an awful lot of white help. Town and all, when I went to school, there was all white people. And that's why I said it was only five of us, I think five or six of us in the half-breed that was in town. So we had to go to the public school. We were in the city town limits. And the rest of the native children, the full-blood native children, had to go to school up the mission. They were up that way anyhow. They were at the mission anyhow.
Oh, how far away was the mission?
3 miles. But the village was up there. They had the Episcopalian church up there, and they had, I don't know whether it was, how the teachers were selected or anything. But we did have, one of the teachers I had was a native half-breed, Jessie Harper. She was born at 10, though. And she went outside and got her teaching degrees. She was really the first teacher I had, I guess. Then I had Mr. Mosey. He married her, and then I don't know whether he's alive yet or no, do you? B.B. Mosey. I know Yvonne is alive, but I can't get a hold of her. That's their oldest daughter.
I've seen her pictures. Yvonne Mosey?
Yeah. I've tried to get a hold of her, but I in Fairbanks, but I couldn't get her. Or Anchorage it is, I believe it is. I called her, I don't know how many different times, but she was never home. And because I went to school to both her mother and her father. Her mother-to-be and her father, that was it. And I wanted to, talk to her.
Well, at the time you were going to school, were you also learning, did you learn how to speak Native from your mother?
I did it when she was alive. Mm-hmm. See, I lost her at an early age. I lost my mother when I was only 9. Then I lived with my dad, and I was not in contact with the Natives anymore. In a sense, I was in the same town of some Natives, but I lost contact with the talking. Naturally, I didn't mingle, I didn't go up to the mission all the time where the people were, So I lost it.
What was it like up at the mission? I mean, did you ever go up there and see what it was like?
No, that's the big thing. You see, I never went up there until after my dad died. See, my mother died in 1914 and my dad died in 1923. So I didn't get a chance. I didn't go up to the mission until after my dad had died. Then I've been mingling with the natives ever since.
Did many people from
Well, I guess they did during the potlatches and so forth. Maybe they did, but I don't know for sure. Of course, really, the mission was off limits too for the army, mm-hmm. And that's all I know So I can't go too far back when I was growing up on that part at all, because I can't say I was never around there. I didn't go up to the mission myself, even to the potlatches.
Well, what was the military doing there?
That was one of their forts. Mm-hmm. There was a Fort Egbert, which is Eagle. There's Fort Gibbon at Tanana. And then there was Fort St. Michael at St. Michael's.
And what were the forts there to do?
No, just the army was there, that's all. The army. I don't know exactly what there is. I guess it's just natural to have the army there fought because we were, of course, we were a free nation. Canada was, there was nothing to go from one line to the other side there, and you didn't have no worry about where you were going. The only thing is, the mounted police was on the Canadian side. They seen you come in, and they know where you were all the time until you got back out of the Canada. That was it. They kept track of you. In fact, even when they started downriver, I guess they kept track through the army of where you were. If you know, a lot of people drifted down the Yukon River during those early days, you know, and they'd come down in what we call them Yukon boats, and every boat was built, that was built up the river had a number on it. That was a square steering boat, about 10, 12 feet long. And they had a number on them. I guess that's where they kept track of them all the way down the river where they were going. Not that they were after the people or anything, but just if you went through from the Canadian side, they kept track of you. I presume when you went back up route too, they did the same thing. But there was no, you didn't have to have a visor or a reaser or whatever you want to call it to go from one side of the line to the other. You could say, it's just free, you just go anywhere you want to.
How is it that your mother died?
Mother had dropsy, as far as I know. That's all my father told me. He said that there was, well, I knew, I remember the two doctors, Dr. Pearson and Dr. Artaud, I think it was. And Dad said they couldn't do anything for Mother. Yeah.
So after your mother died, what kinds of things did you learn from your father? Because he was really, well, was he the only person teaching you then?
Well, yes. I learned how to do a little farming. And I used to hate to weed the garden.
Did you have a big garden?
Well, we had, I would say we had about an acre. But the biggest part of that acre was old hay for the horse. So that was easy. But we had enough potatoes for our own self, and turnips, and carrots, and radish, and rutabagas. And then he had a little flower garden too besides. Tano, when I was growing up, everybody had a garden. I don't care where you went, where you looked, everybody's front yard had a garden in it. And my garden is better than your garden, for sure, or yours, either one. That's the way they figured, they felt about it too. They all had pride in their gardens. Yeah. But when fall come and everything come out of the ground, oh gee, that was when it tasted good.
Well, what do you think the most important things you learned from your dad were?
Well, survival. He took me out 1 year, the last year he was alive. Yeah, and I learned a lot from him, and I've picked up a lot since, too. You know, we built a house up Doll River, went up there, went up the hard way, we rode and poled a boat. We had to make two trips. We go ahead 2 days, or 1 day, and come back, go back the next day, then take the load on to the next camp. Site, place, you know, then come back. We had to make two trips. Oh, that thing don't. I still go.
I'm going to switch it over right now. Here's.